Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 648 for comics originally released on January 8th, 2020. Now, starting us off in DC is Batman 86. I think for many of us, it's a long time coming. For other people, they were happy with Tom King's run, so you know, maybe they're upset he's gone. I don't know. I'm not in that camp.
Yeah, I wasn't enjoying it that much. There was a few bright spots, but not many.
Yeah, and it's not like his stuff was all bad. There were a couple of things that I think were solid, but there were also some really bad aspects, and I was ready for a new creative team.
Me too.
And I'll be honest, when I got to that first page, and it's all told via captions, this isn't giving me the warm fuzzy I was wanting, guys. Because part of it is Tom King just overused that technique.
Yeah, he had entire issues where it felt like pictures would just, the word dialogue boxes off to the side.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't. But then we got into dialogue with some captions and stuff. I was happy.
Yeah, once we got past the title page, we were into regular comic book storytelling and stuff, and it was all good. There were a couple of things that stood out to me.
Okay.
The introduction of a couple of characters.
Yeah, some new characters there.
The Gunsmith and Mr. Teeth.
Yeah, we didn't see him that much, but I don't know how much we'll see him, but they seem kind of like caricatures almost.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wasn't overly impressed by them. They seemed like almost instant third-rate Batman villains.
Yeah, and like the Gunsmith guy wearing the American flag bandana on his face, it's like, come on.
I mean, granted, it's hard to introduce a Batman villain and not have him seem like a third-rate one to begin with, because, I mean, most of them are going to get to that level, you know?
Exactly, and the guy Mr. Teeth, I was just like, that just looks silly. I don't know what he's going to do. He seems like a knockoff of the Joker for me.
Yeah, I felt the same way. Like a poor man's Joker for some reason, like the angry version.
Yeah, the angry Joker.
So maybe something's going to happen with those characters that'll be cool. Maybe not. I don't know. But there's an aspect of the creative team wanting to kind of, you know, put their stamp on Batman and stuff, which I get.
Yeah, I agree.
And don't have any particular problem with. But when we got to that couple of page, you know, lead up to, what was it, the Night Climber or whatever.
Yeah, that little piece of equipment he's building.
I'm like, there was a big lead-in for that, and if that's what the issue ended on, and I'm honestly not sure what the issue ended on, I was a little confused by that. It's like, big build-up for a kind of a lackluster payoff, if that was the payoff.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I mean, I think the payoff was who the character in the epilogue, the one that's alluded to there. But yeah, I agree with you there. It's just like, it's, I guess, a cool thing that they're doing there. But I feel like I've seen that vehicle before. I mean, it just seems like a different take on a vehicle I've seen before. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, whatever. But I mean, maybe to make a point with hope and faith and everything like that.
I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a decent issue. But
oh, yeah.
There were a couple of things that, I mean, for every good idea, like those shadow casters and stuff, and, you know, it's a Batman mind game kind of a thing. I get it. That works. You know, there were other aspects, like, again, Mr. Teeth and the Gunsmith that didn't come off as well.
I agree with you. This, when they changed direction here with the new creative team, I won't say they completely changed direction. I kind of felt like they may go for, like, a Mark Waid taking over Daredevil approach where he went completely opposite, you know, and kind of freshened it up, or when Mark Waid once again took over Captain America after they went down that dark path. But they didn't necessarily do that, but he made it his own, he made it enjoyable, but it felt, man, a little bit generic.
I think that's fair. There were a couple of things where there were some good moments with, you know, Lucius filling in for Alfred and stuff like that, and how that played out.
Yep.
There was a couple of good moments there.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I like the fight in there that they had, the fight scene and how that played out. But I was surprised he didn't last that long.
I was a little confused by where they're going with Batman kind of having this idea of redesigning Gotham somehow.
That's one thing. It was like the biggest thing because, okay, I'm cool with that if they want to do that. And, you know, okay, the take is, okay, you have a billionaire, you know, he's a trustee of money. You can think of that point. Some people, you give them money, they waste it. They spend it on yachts and, you know, special weapons and, you know, whatever strikes their fancy. Some people do good with the money that they have, you know, they better the community, they better the world, the better people around them. So I think they're trying to take that path instead of always making him dark and brooding, make him do something good in the world, besides just taking out a bad guy, which the cops do, you know, on a regular basis. So seeing that's a, you know, kind of a hint there, but we're not seeing it.
Yeah. And I expect with the first issue of a new run that some seeds need to be planted for later issues and stuff. So I'm good with that. But there was a little bit of a sense that whatever he's going to rebuild, you know, Gotham to be, that not everyone thinks it's good.
Yeah, I agree with that. So I'm interested to see that where they go with this and the takes that people have on it. And yeah, it could be really cool or it could be very boring, depending on which road they take.
Well, and it could be something that's really cool but never really pays out in the long run.
Yeah, it'll be something that happens over an arc or two and then it's quickly forgotten. And we just don't know right now.
I mean, at one point, this was a couple of years back, I think it was the Batman Family 8-issue weekly series they did. They established that there was, and I forget who had originally done it, but somebody had laced the entire city with surveillance.
Oh, okay.
And basically, Batgirl or Oracle, I forget which she was at the time, takes control of it and basically has eyes everywhere. And it's a way to explain how Batman and his crew know what's going on everywhere.
Yeah, they're always there when the bad guy's doing something.
Well, and they know everything for everybody kind of deal.
Very true. Well, thus, he has the, I guess, backup plan for every hero to take him down in case something goes wrong.
Mm-hmm. But also, you know, being able to you know, scour the city looking for a clue or an individual or something like that. This was a plausible explanation at somebody else's, you know, dime or whatever.
But did it just kind of go away into the ether?
Yep.
Ah, that's disappointing because that's actually a cool thing that they could have done.
Yeah. And is this redesign of Gotham going to involve him setting up satellite bat caves again that get conveniently forgotten later? Or is it something else? I mean, we need more. And it's a first issue of a new creative team, so I don't expect all the answers here.
Yeah.
But it was just, there was some of the conversations with Selina at the fundraiser thing seemed a little weird.
I would agree with you there. It did seem awkward or off at certain times. Now, I'm also, you know, with changes going forward, the thing that, you know, not to go too far off tangent, but if 5G is a real thing and it happens this summer, you know, any changes that happen here, it could be an arc and then short-lived because we could be dealing with someone completely different and we just don't know.
Kind of like the whole Arkham Manor thing that lasted for an arc or two and then was forgotten.
Yeah, so that's where I don't know how much impact we'll have. But all that being said, it does feel like, you know, they basically rinsed everything a little bit. There's still some Tom King fingerprints on this because you see that stuff kind of spilling over. But it seems like he's trying to put his own fingerprints here. He's trying to take it in his own direction. And it was enjoyable, although not mind-blowing or anything like that.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. It was a fun read. It was good. There was a definite aspect of, I think, these creators want to work on Batman and are having a fun time on that and adding some cool aspects to his arsenal and stuff like that, which I like.
Yeah, me too.
But it's not one of those where I just came out of it thinking, wow, this is going to be the best Batman run ever. And it may turn out to be that at some point, but out of the gate, it doesn't look that way. It doesn't look like the worst either.
Yeah, it could be the best ever, or it could be a placeholder, and we just don't know. Too early to tell. But that being said, I'm happy that we're going in a new direction. I know Tom King's going to get to finish his own thing up in Batman, Catwoman, whenever that comes out. But I'm on board for this. I'm enjoying it. And it's not that I hated everything with Tom King. It was boring at times. There were some things he did I didn't enjoy. And this just feels more to my liking. The thing that I was kind of excited about with this book is I like the reference in the epilogue of where he's going to be taking us with this. So I'm completely on board for that. And I'm also a little bit excited that he does talk a little bit about faith and hope, because I think coming out of the depressing PTSD writing that we saw, he's talking about he's going to not necessarily make it bright and happy, but he's going to take it in a different direction and give him some, you know, faith as he takes it down that path.
a little more uplifting than kind of some of the depressing Tom King stuff, maybe?
Yeah, that's the way I read it. And the, like I said, the only thing that could this could be a placeholder temporarily, possibly for the 5G thing. We just don't know.
Well, and even if it is, it's not necessarily a bad thing because they could actually, and this is giving them a lot of credit, be using this to set up stuff that could take a decade to play out. But if they jump forward and or this gets shoved back in time a decade or something, maybe Bruce Wayne has had time to rebuild part of Gotham, redesign it, and that benefits the next Batman.
Exactly. And if they do this 5G thing, this is just me thinking and spitballing here. And let's say there's a new guy who's, you know, guy or girl for all we know today with the Batman persona. We could also basically have this pocket universe, not really a pocket universe, looking back at the past here about what happened in between now and then.
Yeah, even if they go, like you said, to a fifth generation of heroes and stuff, there's nothing saying they can't do stories set back in the fourth.
Exactly. So he could sit here and just take a run at it and just start going with it. And I'd be happy with that, because for the people who are longtime past readers, you know, of Bruce Wayne, you're not really going to lose anything. It's just maybe this will attract some new younger readers, a different demographic. Who knows?
Yeah. Again, I thought this was a good, you know, issue and stuff. There are a couple of things that they're setting up. You know, the cauldron is apparently some part of Gotham I don't recall ever hearing about, but okay, fine, whatever.
Yeah. You know? Maybe like Hell's Kitchen. Who knows?
Could be.
Yeah. And the art in here was fantastic again.
It definitely was a good issue. It's just I think they're trying to do a lot, and this is one where they might have benefited from a larger, you know, first issue of the new run.
I would agree with you there, because he put a lot of seeds in this issue, and you put this many seeds in there, it's just a good deal of information. You know, spreading that out, or like you said, having a bigger issue would have definitely helped. Give it a little more air.
Yeah, but even with all the seeds, there was enough payoff. It wasn't all set up and no payoff. So
I agree.
I appreciated that aspect.
Me too. And part of is that fight scene. I felt like that was some payoff there. And I'm happy with it. Like I said, not, you know, it didn't knock my socks off, but it was definitely solid.
Yeah, that's about where I came down. I'm going to go with a B on this. I definitely think it's got a lot of potential for the start of what could be a great run. But, you know, we need a little more time to really see if it's going to develop or if it's just they're so enamored with putting new toys in Batman's arsenal that they forget to tell good stories. I don't think that'll be the case, but you just never know.
Yeah. Well, we are in sync, good sir, because I gave it a B as well. And I said it's a good read. I like the premise. I like the take. And I'm waiting to see what happens with the changes that he made with this new character, if that sticks for long term, which I think it must. I have a feeling that the sidekick, you know, I try not to talk about it because I can't remember if we talked about it before. If it's going to be like the new Uncle Ben, you know, that thing that you can't change.
I think there's a lot that they've done and undone at various runs that I don't think anything sticks the way it used to.
I would agree.
So we'll see. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, that sounds good.
This is Star Number One. Now, this is spinning out of events out of the Captain Marvel title. And I stopped reading the Captain Marvel title well before these events that spun out of it spun out.
Okay.
So this is my introduction to this character.
Okay. And I am still reading Captain Marvel, but I teeter back and forth about dropping it. But it kind of picked up a little bit for me, but I have read it, and that's where I saw Star for the first time.
I had seen the covers and previews and stuff like that, interesting costume design, so I've been curious about the character. I will say that bottom panel on that first story page, when they kind of flash back to some stuff,
yeah,
didn't exactly, you know, impress me in a favorable way.
Yeah, you were not enamored with that panel.
I was not enamored with that panel, and it made me question exactly what they're doing over in that Captain Marvel book.
Yeah, honestly, I think you would not like the take and what's going on right now.
It felt a little unheroic.
Yeah, I would say it's taken Captain Marvel's been taking down a dark path, and I enjoy that. You would probably not enjoy it.
Fair enough. This was a good chance to get to know this character and get a feel for the current status quo as she's trying to figure out what her powers are and how to use them.
Yeah, I would agree. She definitely, yeah, I like this. It felt a little bit like when Ms. Marvel first came out. It was almost that take on the character where they're finding out their power set, what they can do. This is a character that directly spun out of the Infinity Wars, which we reviewed way back, like probably a year ago, or maybe it was over the summer. I can't remember. With the Infinity Wars, the people actually absorb the gems inside of them. And so she's developing powers through there, but you have the powers of this stone or gem, whatever you want to call it. But harnessing it and learning the correct way to utilize it, that's part of the fun here and part of the development of the character.
Well, and we got some of that with whatever title it was that had Wolverine and Loki palling around with the guy who had the time stone.
That's very true. I did like that issue.
Yeah, and there was a lot of things that felt familiar, but in a good way.
Yeah, I kind of like these coming of age, or not really even coming of age, but discovering the power set and discovering who they are. And because you always wondered, if you had a power, how would you test it? How would you see how far you could go? You know, what would you do?
I kind of want to see somebody, and I think like a Kurt Busiek would be a good person to do it, or Mark Waid or somebody like that, do that kind of learning curve story for some character that's just gotten their powers, but have the twist be what they think their powers are and what their powers actually are don't match.
That would be really cool. That would be a fun read.
You know, you've got somebody who thinks they've got super strength, but really what they have is gravity manipulation powers.
Yeah, so they're like sitting up there and they're thinking, I can bench press 10,000 pounds, but really that's not what they're doing.
And 9 times out of 10, it's a difference that makes no difference. But man, on that 10th time?
Yeah.
You're going to get your butt kicked.
Very true. Because if you use it in the wrong way, it's going to be a surprise that will not be a good surprise.
Yeah, even if it's more, you know, effective than you imagine, that could even be worse kind of thing.
Definitely. Now, I also, in this issue, I really enjoyed the Jessica Jones appearance in here and what happened.
I like the Loki one, actually.
You like the Loki one? Okay. Yeah, the Loki one was very cool.
I liked when he first shows up with the baseball cap.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just kind of funny with the horns and stuff on it. I mean, it's a nothing moment type thing, but it was a nice little kind of thing that the artist tossed in.
Yeah, I agree. And how he was trying to do what he did and how she interacted with him was hilarious. Mm-hmm.
The Jessica Jones stuff was fun.
It just harkens back to, you know, basically who she is from the past and what we learned. And the ultimate way you could really tick her off, she did it.
Yeah, there are certain things you don't do to Jessica Jones, and Star tried to do one of them and didn't go over well.
Yeah, that was kind of clever. I liked it.
I was a little confused by the page before that in the East Village.
Okay.
I'm going there now. We get somebody walking in not having brought donuts.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, what is this? What's going on?
Yeah, that I was looking at too, and I don't know what that was. I'm like, is that supposed to be? Because immediately the next page it's Jessica Jones, and I'm like, but that's not her.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get that. I don't know what I missed. I looked at that a few times. It's got to be in reference to something, but I don't know what it is.
I think it's another group going after the stones.
Probably, yeah.
But that's one of those things that I'm sure in the trade that'll be something that's you know, planting a seed for a later issue and stuff, but all I got is this issue at the moment.
Yeah, in the trade, the reader's going to flip immediately to the issue 2. There'll be a little, you know, picture break, and it'll introduce these characters. While we, being the single readers, we're going to have to wait a month.
Or more, depending on when they pick it back up. It could be 2-3 issues from now.
Exactly. And 3 months from now, I'll probably forget this panel.
Yeah, that's the problem I tend to have.
Yeah, this is like the thing written for the trade. When they do stuff like this and there's no payoff for it, you're really testing a reader's ability to remember things that are really insignificant to the story now. And if you don't have that flow, you threw something in there that's cool for someone else reading it in a completely different format.
Yeah, but that's also where I think the scenes with Loki and Jessica Jones benefit the issue. Because those scenes in and of themselves have some payoff, have some meat to them. So you feel that you got something out of the issue, even if you didn't get everything out of the issue.
Exactly. Those scenes, even the Titania thing, they hook me because something happened. It was fun. And I think I'll remember this scene, or those scenes, the Titania, the Loki, and the Jessica Jones, probably 2-3 months from now, if not 6 months from now, whereas this other thing, is not going to have any bearing on me.
Well, yeah, because it was a one-page kind of a setup, and almost nothing happened in that page.
Yeah, so those are the parts that are cool when you're writing, and I see most writers, you know, they write and they foreshadow and they do things like that. They learn this in writing classes. So she's doing a little foreshadowing, but, you know, in a comic medium, foreshadowing is sometimes lost when you're writing for a trade when I'm reading it as a single.
Well, the problem is you've got to do the foreshadowing, otherwise things come out of the blue and that's bad. But yep. If all the scene is doing is foreshadowing and it doesn't appear to play into what's going on in this issue, one, it highlights the fact it's foreshadowing something. And two, it's less effective because it seems like it's nothing but setup.
Yeah, I would agree. And that was the only page that was really like that, that kind of, I guess you could say, is a letdown a little bit. But hopefully she learns from it. But the thing is, I feel like a lot of writers that we have today don't learn from that. They write for the trade specifically, which is why we had a discussion on our Slack channel about that exact topic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, which is funny.
I think if you're writing something that's being serialized, and particularly when they're charging the couple of bucks for it, I mean $3.99 for this, you've got to respect that people are going to try individual installments. Maybe they've read the previous ones, maybe they haven't, maybe they'll read the next ones, maybe they won't. But they need to get something as a return for that investment for the singular installment they've got, in addition to getting that bigger story.
I would agree. Something to hook you, something to give you some payoff, something to feel like you've moved the story forward and I've obtained some information, and that builds that habit. You know, if they want me to buy single comics, they got to keep the habit going. And to keep the habit going, you got to make it worthwhile. $4 is a steep price to pay if they're not going to give you some meat on the bone.
Yeah. Well, and this ends with a kind of a reveal there at the end, which I liked. I thought it was interesting.
I really like the direction it's going there.
But if that's what they're using to entice people to the next issue, it's weak, because if it was just that, unless you're, you know, really, it's like, wow, that's amazing, that's not going to be enough to get you to the next issue. Whereas if you've been liking everything else going on and that intrigues you, then that helps.
Exactly. If there would have been, I'm trying to think, maybe the thing that happened with Loki, and it was building up to something big, and this big thing of an interaction between Loki and Star there at the end, that might have been like, man, I need to know what happened between them. That could be the buildup. Whereas this is just a pop, haha, here's the character, and which is cool. But like you said, if I don't know who that is, luckily you and I know who it is, it's going to do nothing for me.
Well, imagine if that last page wasn't there and the last line of dialogue on the previous page was not. They could have conceivably ended with where Star and Jessica Jones were at there.
And that seems actually like a better ending point right there.
Now, the question is,
possibly,
if you had waited for the reveal at the beginning of the next issue, and that was the first page of the next issue, it'd be like, wait, what's going on here? And that would feel a little bit of a cheat. So figuring out how to set the stuff up, end on a clean note that entices us, gives us something to chew on before the next issue and think about, there's a definite art to that.
There is an art to it. And now that you say it, you know, I look at that page before, that's a logical place to end the issue. But like you said, if they could have seeded that character in there somewhere in a different way, it could have set up something very nicely in the next issue. So this was not the oversized normal number one. It's a $3.99 normal sized issue. So maybe if there would have been those 4 or 5 extra pages, just like with the Batman, some of the seeds could have been fleshed out a little bit more that would have been cool.
Yeah. Overall, I enjoyed this. I thought it was good story, good art. And I like how this character, and again, I don't know the past story of Star, doesn't seem very heroic in the past, but this character could wind up out of this series either a hero or a villain. I really can't tell which direction they're going, and I like that.
Yeah, me too. And I've been enjoying the character. I've just seen her for, you know, a couple issues over in Captain Marvel, and this came out, and I wanted to read it. We read the Infinity War stuff, and I'm just like, it's nice that they're actually doing something with that. I thought it was silly when they first said, oh, and all the stones go into people. But I like the character. I like that she's a little bit gray. She's not irredeemable. Like we read that irredeemable Ant-Man a long time ago. I think she's someone who could go either direction and maybe just started off on the wrong foot.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm curious. I like this. This was not something that was on my regular reading list, but I am adding it to it.
Oh, awesome. They got you.
Yeah, I was pleased with this. It's a fun take. We'll see what happens, because this is a miniseries, right?
Yeah, it's only 5 issues, I believe, or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's 5. So, you know, I'm in for 5. We'll see where the character goes after that, and if I'm there for that or not. Don't know yet. But like I said, I enjoyed it enough to do that. I'm giving it a B+. I think it's worth checking out.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I gave it a B. I said I like the character. She's developing. I like that take on it. I almost gave it a B+, but I went with a B just because I was like, I don't feel like it was significantly better than Batman, so I felt like they're kind of like similar, very close.
No, that's fair. That's fair. Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah, I'm interested to hear what you have to say about this one.
This is The Clock Number 1. Now, this is by Matt Hawkins, and we've read numerous things by him before, and he's a solid writer.
Yeah, he's one of my go-to writers, you know, like Mark Waid or Greg Rucka. He's one of the guys, most of the time, if he's writing something, I'm enjoying it.
You know, it's interesting because at the end of this, he's got his usual text piece, which is a little bit of his research he'd done to build up the story and stuff.
Yep.
But it also had a list of some of his other work.
Yeah, it really did, yeah.
And what was interesting is some of those other things like Golgotha, Stairway, and Wildfire, I don't think I've read.
Oh, I read those. They're very good.
So I've read a lot of his other stuff, and I enjoyed this quite a bit. And he did a lot here setting up that there's this you know, almost viral aggressive form of cancer that's devastating this world. And he did a couple of things. Like there's the cemetery scene where I guess the wife of the lead character has just died. And to really drive home the point that not only is this hitting the lead character, but it's hitting a lot of society, is we've got this splash of the cemetery, and there's all these other funerals that are happening concurrently.
Yeah, that was a very impactful splash, and worthy of a splash, because sometimes you get splash pages in comics, and it just seems gratuitous. This is not. This is definitely impactful on the story.
Well, yeah, and it's one of those where you can see that, you know, this is a busy cemetery. This is what their world is like these days.
Yeah, so it was really cool. I mean, when it first started off, I was like, okay, you know, UN type, you know, NGO type group. Here we are, you know, giving aid to people. But then the turn in there when it went to, you know, from the refugee camps into the reason why they're there, he has such a powerful hook. And then he gives you the scene of the cemetery. And on from there, it just became very engrossing, the story. He has a way to hook me like very few writers do.
Well, and there was an aspect a little earlier in the story where the guy was like, yeah, we're going to take these samples. Just don't tell him we're doing that. I'm like, that's not really on the up and up.
Yeah, exactly. Talk about being in the gray.
But as you realize the state this world is in,
you understand why.
It's a little more understandable. Yeah, I'm not going to say it makes it right, but it's like when you've got 1 in 4 people dying from this thing, that's a pretty severe impact.
Yeah, and it's almost like you don't want to say the ends justify the means, but it almost feels like you're put into that situation. On one case, you take samples. On the other case, you know, on the other side, you have literally billions of people that could die if you don't do your due diligence. Mm-hmm. So you understand it. So the impact, you know, and that's where it's like, you know, questioning the morals of a person. Are you willing to go into the gray for the greater good?
Yeah. I think they did a good job setting stuff up, moving things along. And there was quite a bit of info dump here, but it was done in a way that it's like, if this were happening in the real world, there would be the Senate hearings or, you know, whatever type stuff. So there would be places for the info dumps like there were here.
Yeah, I would agree. This one really spoke to me. It really resonated with me. I really even liked the way that it ended,
mm-hmm.
but I, you know, at the same time, I was like, that's not the way that really works, but but you understand why it was doing that. You know, it's not like there's a thing there hooked in, but it really was really cool. And at the very end, that's was awesome how he talked about the weaponization of diseases, because he's talking about it there and how it was talked to him off the record after he let someone read his, and you realize how tangible this is, how this is really happening, how this does play out. And it makes you question things.
It does. It makes me question, you know, why and how somebody would go to some kind of biotech symposium and just flat out asking, you know, have you guys thought about weaponizing cancer?
Yeah. I'm like,
who would do that?
Apparently Matt Hawkins does that.
I can imagine the strange looks he got. I would lead with, I am a comic book writer or sci-fi writer, whatever you want to say, and I have this story idea. And start with up front, I don't want to know how to actually weaponize. I just want to know the concept. You know what I mean? Not looking for a how-to manual.
Yeah, I agree. Apparently Matt Hawkins goes to these conferences and asks questions like this, and let's hope that he checks in with Homeland Security because I can only imagine the looks he gets and the references to the FBI. You know, they're probably doing background checks on him right now.
I appreciate that he does his due diligence for his comics and stuff. I just hope it doesn't wind up with him getting arrested or something.
Yeah, that was terrifying. I was like, oh my God, what kind of question is that to ask?
What I like is in this issue, we get to know the lead character, the problem impacting this world. And in addition to all that setup, I feel the story is in full swing by the end of the issue. And we get a twist or two of things to be thinking about.
Yeah, it felt like you almost had a complete story inside of here and build up for the next issue. Wow, boom. It was almost breakneck pace, but it wasn't. It was kind of like so much material in here, but the story has moved so far forward and we're brought up to speed, and I'm hungry for the next issue, and I'm sure you are too.
Yeah, he's one of those writers. I tend to check out his stuff because, like you, I've liked a lot of what he's done. Even if the concept necessarily isn't something that it's like, oh yeah, I've got to go read that, his execution is really good.
Yeah, and also to speak about the writer, his breadth of topics, and he's not just a good sci-fi writer. He's not just a good, slice of life writer. He writes everything from, you know, more adult comics to slice of life to sci-fi to you name the topic, he's written it. And I've just been very impressed that he puts a lot of work into everything he does, and he's able to nail a whole breadth of topics. He's not a one-trick pony.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
Yeah, and you know, like I like, I'm trying to think of his name, Ed Brubaker. Ed Brubaker, great writer, but he stays in a certain genre. He doesn't steer too far from that genre. And I think Matt Hawkins, he's able to go in and out of so many different things.
Yeah, there's some that are very hard sci-fi. There are others, they'll like Tithe, which is more almost police procedural.
Exactly, and that's so tough to do because people are used to writing a certain way, whether it be Capes and Cowls or this or that. And he seems like he can write a superhero thing if he needs to. He can write a book like The Tithe. He can write something like The Clock. And then he can also write something about swingers. Mm-hmm. So it's just the crazy the amount of material he can write. So I'm just always impressed. And he has a way of hooking me in what he writes. I consume it and I remember it. And that's tough to do with a single issue. And I'm spaced out for a month.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. He's a terrific writer. I've enjoyed a lot of his work. That's why I was surprised when I got to that end after his text piece, and it's like, here's some of the other stuff he's done. And it was things that I was not familiar with.
I would highly recommend you picking up the trades, because I did read them, and they were good.
I'll have to give that some thought.
Yeah, because, I mean, I know you're behind on your trades, and you have a lot of reading. But Golgotha, believe it or not, that was the one and only Kickstarter, because I didn't know a lot about Kickstarter. I joined in on that. So I got a Kickstarter edition with my name in the book at the very end. It was kind of funny.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so it was a really good read.
Because, I mean, I've read Symmetry and Think Tank and enjoyed those quite a bit.
Yeah, and Golgotha, I think this year they're coming out with a second volume of it, and it was only a trade. It was not a single issue, which is why you might have passed it initially.
That's probably how I missed it, yeah, because I usually get stuff in the issues.
Yeah, and I'll talk with you more about that after we're done recording, because there's some interesting things, just to give you a heads up.
Okay, cool. So, what else did you read this week?
Did we give it a score?
Oh, sorry, we didn't. I totally skipped that. You're right. I'm jumping all over the place. I gave it an A, and I totally recommend it, but I'm a fan of Matt Hawkins.
Yeah, I gave it an A as well. I think everyone should read it, knowing that I'm a fan of Matt Hawkins. I love this guy, but I think everyone should pick it up and give it a try, because it's just engrossing. But with the reading side of things, I'm glad you asked. I read a lot of good things this last week. I actually got through all my comics, and this was one of the ones I really enjoyed. I also enjoyed Young Justice was a good read. The second volume of 20XX, which I know you're not on board with that, came out, but I'm still reading it and I'm enjoying it. And then there was like a lot of different things, like Daphne Byrne. It was another one of those Joe Hill comics over at DC was good. And then I really enjoyed Excalibur and what was the other one? X-Force.
Yeah, X-Force was really good. I thought was good.
Yeah, X-Force was really good, so I'm really enjoying that. Oh, and Sonata. Sonata, they had another issue of Sonata, which I really enjoyed.
That was fun. I also enjoyed the first issue of the second season of Doctor Who's 13th Doctor.
Ah, I didn't read that. I didn't read it. So you're enjoying Doctor Who?
I picked that one up because the 13th Doctor is going to be teaming up with the 10th Doctor, and it's taking place during the Blink episode of the 10th Doctor.
Oh, okay, cool.
Where they introduced the Weeping Angels.
Well, if there's ever a good jumping on point for new readers, because I've never read Doctor Who, and they have a press PDF or something like that, let me know. I'd be down to do a review of it. Check it out.
I'll try to keep an eye out for something like that. I don't know if I'm going to stay on after the 10th Doctor bails on the 13th Doctor or not, but I'm curious how the team up goes. So
yeah, just having never read it, I just don't know what to think. Now, one thing I was going to ask you, you're probably going to do a recording on it, so I'm not going to spoil that. But did you watch the last two parts of the Crisis on Infinite Earths?
I did that last night, and I recorded after each part with my sister. Matter of fact, I need to get that episode edited. It'll probably go up either right after this or the episode after right after this. So either the Wednesday or Friday for this week.
Well, no spoilers for your thing, but I watched it just an hour before we record it, so I liked it.
It was good. We went ahead and rewatched the first three parts before watching parts 4 and 5, just to get back into the swing of things. I think they landed the ending on it and did some stuff I had expected, a few things I hadn't expected, and I'm just enjoying what they're doing over on the CW.
Yeah, I'm always like kind of looking at my wife for her reactions, because my wife really has no comic book background at all, and she liked it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she enjoyed it. Her favorite one of the TV shows is, well, she either likes Flash or Legends of Tomorrow, so it was nice that it ended with Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah,
so she liked that, and then she was like, she always thought it was silly. You know that big cartoon character they have, Bebo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's like, what is that doing there? She's like laughing. I'm like, I have no clue.
That's from Legends, and Legends gets a little wacky at times.
Exactly. So I'm just like, at that part, I just kind of tune out. I'm like, all right. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you on our Slack channel, just something I wanted to talk with you about, because we were talking earlier about stuff, you know, writing for the trade and writing single issues. There was some discussion about Image moving some of their titles and soliciting more of their titles as OGNs and not coming out with single issues. And I kind of wrote up some stuff on that, but what are your thoughts on Image and what they're doing? Do you think it's industry wide? Just, you know, curious about your thoughts.
Image is a bit of a unique case because it's really an umbrella publisher for a lot of creator owned stuff.
Yeah.
And I think there's definitely, it's one of those things, is this a kind of a movie story or a TV story kind of a thing? If it's something where there's that never-ending battle and stuff, doing it in trade installments I don't think is the wisest move. But if it's something that's more of a, here is a chunk of story and it is kind of a self-contained movie-sized kind of a thing, going straight to trade makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I would agree.
From a reader point of view, from a creator point of view, you're doing a lot of work before you get any payback or any kind of market testing and validation.
Yeah, and if that idea is a flop, and I hate to say that, but there are ideas that are flops. You put in, you know, 4, 5, 6 months work, and now there's no payout at the end.
Well, and flop isn't quite the term I'd use. I think I know what you're getting at, though. It may just not be the right thing for the market at the right time.
Yeah. It could I'm
be
brutal.
It could be a great property or whatever, but either it's getting buried by, you know, whatever big events going on at DC or Marvel or what have you. But I've talked to a number of creators over the years at San Diego with a, hey, when's your second issue from this Image title going to come out? And it's, well, I'm not doing one. Lost my shirt on the first or whatever, or just didn't have the payoff or, you know, whatever. Now, if they did that on a $3.99 or whatever the then current price would have been and decided it wasn't worth it, I've lost money on the first issue, imagine how much it could have, you know, just gutted them financially if they'd had to make, you know, 4 or 5 times that investment to do a full trade paperback or something.
That's got to be rough. And when you're doing a trade paperback, typically you got to buy a lot of those graphic novels in bulk, and they're very pricey getting those from the printer.
There are different price breaks because you're doing a higher page count and stuff, but you've done I mean, to me, the print, there's the cost of the printing, but there's also the creation cost.
Just the amount of time that they put aside. They haven't done anything for 4 or 5 months.
Exactly. Plus, you got to pay somebody to letter it, or you're doing that yourself, which is more time. I mean, it's a definite time sink. That's why. I was going to say, that's why I think it's smart when people like Mike Norton and Tom Zoller and stuff do stuff on the web to get it out there, get the feedback and the market approval or whatever, as they're building up this thing that they then drop either as single issues or as a hardcover.
Yeah, I was surprised that that book that I really enjoyed from Udong, Menage a Trois or whatever it is, Menage a Three, it was a webcomic. And mm-hmm. you can read it for free online if you want to. You don't have to buy it. But I like, you know, of course, tactile, and I don't like having ads popped up all over and scrolling four panels at a time. But yeah, that's a much more economical way. They get some feedback. They see that people are actually reading and enjoying it. They do a Kickstarter to kick the thing off and then run, you know, run from there. But there's some validation. They got some payment for it. They did it in their free time. They maybe could keep a day job as they slowly churn the material out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of smart. I would also say, you know, besides the just the financial, you know, putting in 4 to 5 months of work, and just they also couldn't sell it for the $9.99, which is Image is kind of like done with most of their, you know, serialized stuff. When they're coming out with the first trade, it's $9.99 as a jumping on point. So that one's going to be priced a lot more expensively than most volume ones at Image.
But they can do that because they've gotten those first 4 to 6 issues out, know there's enough market for it, that they're going to keep doing the monthly issues, and that there'll be a second trade.
Yeah.
And if you're going with the trade, the first volume of the trade, at once with no idea how well it's going to be received in the market, you have no idea if you're going to do a second one or not. But the problem is you need to have started on the second one.
Yeah. And if I stick my book on the shelf at $19.99 because I need to eat and pay some bills, I'm hoping that's what I imagine most of them are doing. At that point, it's going to look way less attractive than, okay, volume one, $9.99. Why is this one $20? Or why is this one $17? That's kind of expensive.
Well, I mean, the stuff we talked about in this episode are either the first issues of a title or the first issue of a new creative team.
Yep.
Okay, so first thing. And it's one thing to say, you know what, I'm going to try it at $3.99.
Yeah.
How many of these do you think we would have sampled at, again, $15.99, $19.99, or whatever they would have been if they'd been original to trade at a 5 to 6 issue length?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I agree with you. That's a lot of investment, because there's books that come out that I find very interesting. And if it wasn't a resolicit of something that I can look at on Amazon's, you know, store, where they give you some preview pages or something like that, it's really tough to justify, because I don't know if I'm going to like it. And that's a lot of money to put down. I've been burned in the past.
It's a lot of money. It's a lot of time to invest.
Yeah. And you don't want to drop $20, get it, and after the first chapter, be like, ooh, this isn't for me. Because then I feel almost obligated to read it because I paid this money. Or you just really wasted a lot of cash. You're stuck.
There's an aspect of the sunk cost fallacy of, I'm this far in, do I give up or just keep going?
Yeah. I've been in that position. There's some things I'm just like, man, I'm just going to flip through it and see if I can get the gist of it, because I just can't justify putting a lot of time into this because I really don't like it.
I've had one or two things on TV type stuff where about halfway through marathoning a season, I went to my sister and said, do we keep going or do we just stop?
And you guys stopped?
We did that. We had two where we hit that kind of a question of, okay, we're pausing here for the night. Do we pick it up again or not? And in both cases, we did. And in one case, I think it was the right choice. In the other case, I stand by the we watched it all. But yeah.
Yeah. We recorded the title under the bus.
We recorded on both of those.
Oh, you did? Okay.
And those will get out eventually.
Oh, okay. So you haven't released them yet?
Oh, no.
All right. Well, I'm interested to hear what they are.
Yeah, one of them, we'll see how it goes. And yeah, because some stuff's just not for me, and I get that.
Yeah, it really is. And by the way, just so you know, speaking on the some things are not for me, I've gotten a lot better at cutting down my list and not adding too much stuff. So I pared back. I pared back actually probably like, you remember I told you I was getting like 45 titles. Mm-hmm. But it pared back. Right now, the last few shipments I've been getting around 32, 34. And there's some more things I'm just paring back that I just wasn't enjoying. I'm getting a lot more picky on what I add. It's because, one, they take up so much space, and two, time is precious, and I want to spend time on things I really enjoy. And not all of the things I really enjoy are comics. I love comics, but, you know, just being able to do some other things.
Absolutely. I get it. I mean, if I had nothing but time in the world and stuff, I certainly would probably be all in and stuff, but it's not the case, so I've cut back. But there are times, would I have enjoyed knowing the backstory of Star before reading that first issue? Yeah, absolutely. You know, do I necessarily want to be reading everything that Marvel and DC are putting out? Nope, not at all.
Yeah, you don't feel obligated to do that. And I think that's a healthy place to be in, because if you feel like you have to have everything, I don't know. I don't think you can reasonably say that everything is good, you know? And I mean, and if you're buying things that aren't good, it's kind of reinforcing people or companies or creators to keep making bad stuff.
There's many vantage points on that, and that's definitely a vote with your wallet and stuff, and there's a lot of merit to that one. But I think there's also something to be said for trying out enough stuff, including things that turn out to be just awful, so you really appreciate the good stuff.
That's true. When I get to the good comics, like I said, when I get to Matt Hawkins, I remember his book from month to month, and that's not true with every book that I read. Some books I don't remember. I'm like, oh yeah, what's going on in this? And that's kind of like a red flag as to, man, do you really like this? Because you can't even remember what in the heck happened 1 month ago.
Imagine there was some magical place on the internet where you could get, and it's calibrated to your taste, an accurate assessment of, is this brilliant work or not?
Yeah.
And all you read was the brilliant stuff. Now, there's going to come a point where you've pretty much run the course of everything that's brilliant for you, and then you're going to be reading stuff that isn't brilliant for you. And if it's your first experience doing that, or it's unusual, you know, you're only reading brilliant masterworks, and now you're reading just dreck, it's going to be rough.
It would be rough. And, you know, I am the type of person, I'm just naturally like this, I save the best for last. And so even with my reading, I don't know if it's a sickness, you know, I'm just very anal about things. Like I read my books in alphabetical order, my weekly books that come in. But then also I when it comes to trade paperbacks, I try to read the ones that I don't really think I'll like first, and I'm saving those really good ones for the end. So hopefully when I get to retirement, I'll be like, man, this is awesome.
Hope so. I just remember, what was it? It was in the Outer Limits or Twilight Zone, where the guy is at the end of the world, has nothing but time and all the books in the world, and his glasses break.
Son of a gun. Yeah, but all right, now you're making me think I'm going to lose my vision. Knock on wood. I'm over here knocking on wood.
Just saying. You know, a lot to be said for immediate gratification at times, too.
Very true. Just read it all. Conundrums.
Exactly. There's no right answer to that stuff. Whatever works for people is all good.
Exactly. But I did also notice by reading that thing, they said Image has cut down their output by about a third. And I've seen that a little bit. I see a lot more of the graphic novels in like the latest previews, and you don't see as many of the monthly titles that are out there. And as stuff is wrapping up, I don't see the glut of number ones like we used to see. But I think some of that's they're choosing to do so, and some they're not choosing, because some of those people are choosing to go to Aftershock, Ablaze, you name the publisher out there, there's tons of them. They're choosing to go with like a more traditional publisher route where they get editors, they get compensation along the way, and they get a bonus if the book sells well.
I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with the 22-page comic book format. I think the problem is a lot of writers are not using it effectively.
Correct. I would agree with that. And that's kind of disappointing for us being monthly readers.
I mean, I remember back in the 80s, there were, you know, 8 to 10 page backup features that were riveting from month to month.
Yeah. And we almost never see that now. I mean, it's rare. We used to see a little bit of that stuff with the Marvel oversized issues, but they're not very riveting. Mm-hmm. They give you a little 8-page story, but it's like it felt like tacked on.
Well, because I think the art of how to write those effectively is gone.
It really is. Now, I remember I used to be hooked more so than I am now. There are books that hook me, but it seems like there's fewer and fewer that I enjoy in the monthly format. Yet I feel like if I do read it in a trade, wow, it read much better. And that's unfortunate. Because it seems like they're killing themselves doing that.
I totally get that. There's a couple of TV shows I'm watching on a week-to-week basis. Others I marathon. And there's a lot to be said for the marathon aspect because it's fresher in your mind. You retain the story better and it views better. Same thing with comics.
Yeah, so it's very frustrating because we've almost moved to that binge mentality. Sit comics with the binge books. Love those guys. But
they're selling it in binge-sized installments.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. It's just like, it makes me question, you know, how much longer that has for this to be the format. Because, you know, those numbers do shrink over time. You've seen it and I've seen it. The top sellers now versus the top sellers 20 years ago or 15 years ago. I don't know. There's fewer of us who are getting older. And I think the younger generation, younger people tend to like to read things as a complete story. They don't want to wait a month to read the next chapter.
I don't think it's quite that dire, but I don't think it's quite that healthy either.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. It's not like the top seller, 15 years ago is just head and shoulders above the top seller on the monthly comic side today. But it's one of those things that, again, there's a lot of variant covers propping it up and stuff like that. It would just take a couple of bad months to just gutter, the industry entirely. Because if you were to go through a 3-month stretch where for whatever reason things tank,
yeah,
you're going to have some of the smaller stores start to go out of business. That's going to rebound through Diamond. It's going to impact some of the smaller publisher. That's going to ricochet back to other retailers, and it bounces back and forth. Diamond getting caught in the middle with whatever fails on either the publisher or retailer side, and there are going to be some retailers that make out great because they're able to weather the storm. There are others that are hand to mouth and go away, and maybe that costs readers of the hobby and stuff like that. But it's a question of do we hit that bad spell or not? And there's no reason to think we have to.
Yeah, I don't think we have to. I don't think it's a I don't think we're on the precipice of the oncoming doom. It just I want the market to be a little bit healthier than it is. I want to be respected as a monthly reader. But if you want to if the industry would like to move to a trade or like a binge type format, then that's cool. Just move to that format or write for this format. You can't write for one format and sell it in a different format.
That's the problem. Absolutely.
Yeah. They're writing in one format and selling in a different format. And I think that's where the disconnect is with a lot of readers today. That makes it a little bit frustrating. Even though I'm enjoying myself, when I say frustrating, man, life is good when that's the most frustrations we have.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things, I agree, we're not at the precipice of disaster or whatever, but I do think there is a bit of a sort of Damocles heading above us of, we're not in the most stable of markets.
I agree. So I'm just hoping for the economy to be good, everyone keep their jobs, all the retailers to sell, as much as they can, and for people to, just enjoy this medium and writers to write for this medium and make it worthwhile. If you're going to charge me $4 or $5 for a single 20-page book, you better make it worthwhile.
Exactly. I think they just need to take a serious look of, is there the return on the investment, and do it with a critical eye, not, oh, of course there is, kind of attitude. Because if they can win people over and if people are thinking, wow, that's a great value, I got so much enjoyment out of it and stuff, they're going to keep coming back.
Exactly. Yeah. Like there's certain things, man, I will keep coming back for that. One of them is the clock. I'm coming back for sheet number 2. I'm on board for that. Another thing would be anything Greg Rucka writes. I'm on board for that. And there's been so many good books that make me want to come back and make me happy when I read them. But there's a few stinkers out there, which they're just doing the wrong format in the format that I'm purchasing. And it's okay. Hopefully they learn. Or if not, maybe I'll move to trades on the thing. Who knows?
Yeah. But one thing to keep in mind, everybody who's been listening to this has got to be thinking, there's some great stuff. And whatever they think it is, they've still got time to send in for the next preview spotlight, because that deadline is on the 25th, and the format is basically one clip per listener, recommend what you want to recommend.
That was a perfect segue, wasn't it?
It was a great segue. Thank you for setting that up. I just right there for me.
I just threw it to you. Boom.
Exactly. But basically, yeah, if it's past stuff, either by Matt Hawkins, Greg Rucka, or whomever, You know, tell us why we should be checking it out. Is it in trade? Is it on the Marvel Digital Comics Unlimited, at DC Universe, or is it back issues we should go hunt for? Tell us what we should be go reading and why, and recommend, you know, as many things as you want or as few things as you want.
Yeah, and I'm going to put a shout out on the Slack channel, and you put emails and put notices on the forums, but we had a good turnout for this preview spotlight, and I think we're going to have a better one this time because you don't have to know what page something is on previews. You don't have to read a solicit. You literally just tell us what you're enjoying, whether past, present, future, what you're going to be enjoying, maybe. And just tell us what to read and why. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, really easy. The hardest part is naming the file, and all you got to use is your name.
Yeah, that's not that hard.
Not that hard. So hopefully we'll have some good clips and stuff. Honestly, I have no idea what I'm going to use for mine. I've still got to think about that and get that done. But like I said, it's the morning of Saturday, January 25th. We are doing this one early. This is going to be the February preview spotlight. But that frees me up to do some other stuff during that time in February.
Cool.
So anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Aquaman number 56 from DC, Iron Man 2020 number 1 from Marvel, and Undiscovered Country number 3 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.